Welcome to Unpacking the Digital Shelf, where we explore brand manufacturing in the digital age. Hey everyone, Peter Crosby, Executive Director of the Digital Shelf Institute. You know, more and more, B2B buyers are bringing with them the expectations of a consumer buying experience. Their searches may start on Amazon. They desire a personalized experience. They expect to find the info they need to make a buying decision online. The companies that move aggressively to meet those expectations can gain a real first-mover advantage in digital. Justin King and I spoke with Brian Beck, author of the new book, B2B Billion Dollar E-Commerce, about how to capitalize on this opportunity.
So we're recording on location in Chicago, Illinois at this year's B2B Next, and I have Brian Beck with me. So Brian, I want to start off. What was your topic that you discussed?
We talked about mastering the art of building a post-digital enterprise. What the heck does that mean?
Oh my gosh, how are we post?
I don't know. This is one of our friend Andy Hoare's topics. So yes, it was that was my first question to him.
Andy Hoare, who's running this whole B2B
runs this
Next conference.
Yeah, yeah, he runs the B2B Next conference. And so, yeah, it was interesting trying to define what exactly that meant. But, you know, breaking it down into non-consultant speak, it means, you know, if you've got some basic e-commerce in place, you've got the foundations, what do you do next? Right. So what goes, you know, where do you go next? How do you better connect with the customer using digital means, et cetera? So it was actually a great session. We had a lot of folks in there that were already engaged. And in fact, it was the first time I've been at one of these conferences speaking where I asked the question to the audience, hey guys, how many of you are, you know, in e-commerce? And the majority of the folks raised their hand.
Oh, wow.
A bit of a self-selected audience, of course, but, you know, gosh, that's really encouraging. And the first time I've actually seen that, you know, where the...
Well, top roles that are e-commerce directed inside of a manufacturer distributor. I
mean, yeah.
That's a big deal.
I mean, I spent 17 years in B2C e-commerce, right? And so that's a very mature business, you know, with, you know, retail and brands and such in e-commerce. And, you know, I started to hear things yesterday that I was hearing at retail conferences, right, where they were like, oh, yeah, we're engaged in personalization or, you know, omni-channel, quote-unquote, activities where we're tying our channels together, our sales team, our branches together with online, et cetera. So it's great to see that finally happening. I was just excited to see all those folks engaged. And, you know, I like to ask questions as we go through and engage the audience as we go through the session. And so I was passing the mic around asking people, hey, what are you doing in your business? And they were sharing things that were, you know, B2C like, you know, quote unquote. I mean, it's different, right? But some of the concepts of personalization and product recommendations and cross-channel messaging and marketing, that was coming out. And that's the first time I've ever seen it come out this way.
What do you think of those 50% that still aren't doing it yet? Do you feel like there's, what percentage of that should be doing it? Is there a percentage that just doesn't need to do it?
You know, I think, look, digital is the part as younger and younger buyers come into the marketplace. I mean, every company needs to have a digital strategy. You can't exist without one. And so is e-commerce, you know, the extent to which e-commerce is relevant to each specific company and vertical may vary a bit. I mean, the e-commerce penetration in some categories is going to be higher naturally, but there are, I mean, I would argue a digital strategy is necessary. If you don't have one, you're likely to die as a company.
Yeah.
That's my opinion. It may take 20 years.
Because really even beyond part of commerce is experience. Part of commerce is how do I engage with you? And I want to engage with you where and how and when I choose to. And if you're not doing that in the digital realm, you've cut off more than half of the ways that people will want to receive the experience from you.
Well, and I think we all, you know, the other thing that I hear missing from a lot of conversations, which is frightening to me, is the word customer. And, you know, in understanding what your customer wants and where their preferences have shifted. And, you know, we're going to talk, I think, a little bit about Amazon. Right? And Amazon, clearly, customers, business customers, and certainly consumers have voted that they want to purchase there. So, you know, having, talk about digital strategy as a part of that, you need to have a strategy for Amazon. And so I think those are the kinds of realities that the B2B companies need to confront and understand and not be afraid to take some action. And to me, it seems like those 50%, a lot of the challenges they've had in moving things forward has just been about leadership taking steps in the face of uncertainty and not paying attention to their customer. The customer, particularly as younger customers come into the buying roles and influence roles for B2B purchases, they're demanding some kind of digital transactional capability. So we just see this, you know, I see this evolving, and listening to the customer is the thing they need to start with.
Really. In all the consulting work that you do, is there a consistent role or kind of person that you see the drive for change coming from? Like how, because at the end of the day, we're not companies, we are people inside of companies
right.
that have to step forward and sort of take on these battles. Is there a consistency or?
Well, I would say, number one, it has to come from the top of the organization, right? So if the CEO and board are not saying we have to do something, it's not going to happen. And so you've got, you know, junior level folks who have good intentions, who know they need to do something, but they're not empowered to make the change. So is there a type of personality? I think it's more about something changing in the business that finally gets them to take action. And that change might be a change of leadership because the older guard retires. I have examples of companies I've worked with that, for example, I worked with food service businesses. I was working with a company a few months ago, and the sons took over, right? It's an Asian-owned food company, family-owned business. The sons took over. Guess what they're doing, right? They're implementing e-commerce. They're getting their products on Amazon. They're providing product data to all their resale channels. They're finding ways to upgrade the business in terms of modernize it. They're embracing this. And guess what they're doing as a result of that? They're transforming the business, and they're starting to win more business from their customers because they're making it easier for those customers to buy from them. And so, you know, you see these, and it's, you know, they're a couple 40-year-old guys who grew up, you know, like me, grew up with, you know, technology and you know, are natives. And they've got a great business. It would be easy for them to sit back after they got this business from their parents and just milk it. But they're not doing that. They're saying, I understand what the modern buyer is looking for, and I'm transforming the business to accommodate that need. And so I think, so the first part of my point was a change of control or the new generation coming in the case of a family-owned business. It could also be things like you're losing to competitors, you're losing a major contract, a major change in business results. Those are the things that are starting to, that will also cause action with an existing management team.
Yeah, last year at a session at B2B Next last year, there was a guy, must have been in his late 20s, who had joined his dad's distributor.
Right.
Yep. And his dad was like, we are not doing digital. I have no interest in doing that. So the son actually left and started up an online distributor. And now he's competing with his dad.
Oh, that's funny.
I can imagine what Thanksgiving is like.
That's great.
Pass the stuffing.
Yep. Exactly. Yep. So, but it, you know, ultimately it's, you know, if customers are screaming loudly enough, I mean, that's another catalyst for change. And, you know, I give an example of a large medical products manufacturer that I worked with, and they're, you know, big public $3 billion company. What drove them into e-commerce? Well, it was their customers saying, guys, we're not going to buy from you anymore if you don't enable e-commerce. Yeah, there's other examples of companies that are now, some companies are shifting procurement through Amazon Business. And so they're forcing suppliers to go onto Amazon Business. So, in the world is changing, and you've got to listen to where your customer preferences are, right? And you've got to listen to what their needs are. And those are the companies that are going to win. And so I think you're just going to see a very different landscape in 20 years in B2B, where companies that haven't changed, some of them will be gone.
Yeah.
And the world will just be different.
We had I had a customer say to me, we're not a distributor, we're a technology company. I said, oh, wow, that's amazing. You know, introduce me to all your technology people. We don't have technology people. And then I talked to the CEO and I said, people are telling me you're a technology company, you don't have any technology people. And he's like, we want to be a technology company. Oh, that clarifies it. So you talked about, about e-procurement and Amazon Business. I'd love to talk
sure.
about Amazon Business. I mean, your business has gone through quite a transformation in your career.
Sure.
Where you went from kind of technology consulting to yep. what are you doing now?
Yeah.
And how are you doing?
Well, a lot of my career was as an operator, right? So I was the guy running e-commerce. 17 years of sitting as the VP of e-com or COO of companies where I was leading the e-com team. And, you know, so I was dealing with technology for sure. I was also dealing with marketing, dealing with supporting the customer, omni-channel initiatives. So in my career, for example, I used to run e-commerce at Harbor Freight Tools. And Harbor Freight Tools has now about 800 stores, something like that. And so we were doing omni-channel, you know, 7, 8 years, 10 years ago. We're thinking about how do we use the web to drive store traffic, things like that. So my career has evolved. I mean, but most of it was as an operator. And about 4 or 5 years ago, I got into the consulting side. And so these days, I focus a lot of my time with my company in SIBO, which operates Amazon programs primarily for manufacturers.
How do you spell that?
E-N-C-E-I-B-A. I know it's a
just like it sounds, Peter.
I know, I should have.
You know, everyone puts a V in there or something, but it's a BA. And we took the name from the Ceiba tree, which is the tallest tree in the Amazon rainforest.
Oh, cool.
So the notion is that we're helping our clients stand out in the rainforest.
A little ironic.
Yeah, well, that's true. So these days it's a lot about Amazon strategy, right? And working with Amazon Business and also, you know, Amazon, we have some clients that sell Amazon Consumer as well. So we have both. They may sell the consumers and to businesses. But, you know, there's a lot that goes into an Amazon strategy. So really, a lot of what we're doing is helping companies think through how they should approach Amazon and think about their assortment, think about their selling approach, but then execute it, right? So actually grow the program for them, depending on what the strategy is. So, and then think about it beyond just Amazon, because Amazon has an influence on other channels as well. Amazon is best in the world at transactions, right? That's what they're great at, transactions fulfillment. There's a whole other world out there that's beyond transactions and fulfillment. And it talks about, you know, meeting your customers' needs beyond that. So service, you know, application knowledge, expertise, things that are, you know, go beyond the Amazon world. And we help companies think through that too. So how do you use Amazon as a part of an overall strategy, right, is what I'm getting to.
So imagine when you walk into these consulting engagements, do you feel like you're arriving where people are sort of in a crouch about it? Like if they had their druthers, they wouldn't be doing this? And then is it your job to, how do you bring to life to them the opportunity that right. exists?
Well, change is uncomfortable for everyone, right? And so... And I think this is broader than just Amazon, by the way. I think it's really about, you know, embracing e-commerce as a channel. And it certainly, you know, Amazon comes with concerns that, you know, a lot of manufacturers have, particularly around channel conflict. What a lot of companies don't realize is that by taking certain approaches with Amazon, specifically using a third-party marketplace account selling approach, you can actually mitigate some of that channel conflict risk mm-hmm. because you control the pricing. Right, the retail pricing, and you know, you look at a lot of one of the scariest and somewhat fun in sort of an evil way exercises that I like to do is we'll sit with the CEO of a manufacturer, and we'll go search their products on Amazon, right, and we'll look at their brand name, and up pops something that's like, you know, they maybe was discontinued 3 years ago, is a horrible picture with, you know, taken by somebody, you know, some 15-year-old's iPhone, you know, and it's their listing, and it's got, you know, three bullet points about it with one word each, and that's how their brand
is represented
on Amazon. Yeah. Amazon's getting 70% of product search, right? Google's 20%. Okay, so this is the biggest engine in the world for search, okay? It's consumer and business.
Mm-hmm. Business too.
Business too, right? Okay. Increasingly. Not as much in business, but certainly for business too. Mm-hmm. And Amazon's is now also indexed in Google. So not only are you know, in your 70% being represented with a terrible picture and bad brand presentation, but then it's also getting indexed in Google, right? Mm-hmm. So you're in both places. I mean, your brand in the world of, you know, the place where people go, the younger buyer, the young procurement person going on trying to look for products, they're guaranteed to get that bad listing. Okay. Mm-hmm. So if you're not controlling your brand on Amazon, someone else is, and it's not just on Amazon, it's in Google and other places. So this has huge implications if manufacturers are not really controlling their brand presence.
What do they do about it? I mean, when you kind of approach a, manufacturer from the beginning, like what are some of the first steps that they need to take to do this without giving away your secret sauce?
The good news, Justin, is that this has all been addressed, right? It's addressable is what I'm saying.
Okay.
And so what do you do, right? And this isn't even secret sauce. I mean, there's ways to approach Amazon that are well documented that help you do this. So what you do is you start by looking at your selling approach, and you want to use a selling approach that doesn't give your a lot of resellers the rights to sell on Amazon or Amazon, frankly, in what they call first party selling. That there's some disadvantages to selling to Amazon that way, and it gives the price control to Amazon. Now, it's called one party, first party or 1P selling. Mm-hmm. That's a fine way for many companies to still sell, but quite frankly, the place that we see a lot of our clients moving to who have a brand is what they call 3P. So a third party selling approach usually is a good place to start. You need to have an internet policy, not a MAP policy. Okay, MAP policies are fine. MAP policy is minimum advertised price. Mm-hmm. Okay, you can have a policy there, but that's not really the most effective approach. You need an internet policy, which talks about as a company making products, I'm going to authorize companies to either sell on the internet, including Amazon, or not, and I'm explicitly going to authorize those companies to do that. Mm. Right. So there's a foundation that happens outside of Amazon that you need. It's channel control, basically. It's channel management. And you may authorize some distributors, you may go to some distributors and say, hey guys, let's work together on Amazon. And that's also a fine approach. The point is you need channel governance. You need to make sure you have a path and a plan to manage your channels. And that together with a third party program allows a brand then to control the content. Amazon has this thing called brand registry. And it allows companies to register if they own a trademark, to register their brand. And that gives them some level of control over branded content on Amazon. Mm-hmm. That includes a storefront. They have something called enhanced brand content, which goes into product list pages, and the product content itself. So that if you're a brand, a company is making product, you now, if you take those steps, you now have control over that listing on Amazon, regardless, even if you're selling it, by the way. You don't necessarily, as a manufacturer, have to sell your product. You could authorize your resellers to actually get what they call win the buy box, mm-hmm. right? Which is so you can do some things to control the channel even if you're not selling. The important thing is though that you want your product and your brand to show up in a way that's appropriate for your company on Amazon, because it goes again beyond Amazon. It gets into Google and other places. And
most companies just aren't even just paying, they're not even paying attention.
Well, that's the exercise is
yeah,
kind
that's
of disturbingly
why
fright, you know fun.
Well, so Amazon
sweat dropping down yeah. his or her face.
So we're talking about can we talk about the distinction between Amazon Business and Amazon.com?
Yeah, sure.
Like what's the difference between them? And is this Amazon Business thing going to last? Is it do you see it as the yeah. as a future for business purchasing?
So the second part of your question, yes, in certain categories, and some they're going to have a harder time in because of the nature of the product and it's required to sell it. Remember, Amazon has a long legacy as a consumer, you know, selling platform. And so within the world of Amazon, and by the way, I really admire that company in terms of how focused they've stayed on being innovative and putting the customer first. It's very difficult to do that with 600,000 employees and billions in sales. So admiration, yes. But they also have, you know, this long legacy, right? So I think as you try to, and Justin, I mean, you guys know this really well, right? I mean, there's a lot of complexity in B2B selling that doesn't exist in B2C. And so Amazon is a bit, you know, it's I wouldn't say it's struggling with that, but it's going to have some evolution it needs to go through to meet certain categories of business purchasing that are, you know, a little more complex and harder to achieve. That all said, I think that in certain categories, MRO, categories like office, obviously, office supplies, yeah. to some Jan degree, San, you know, yeah, Jansan, safety, things like that, you're going to see a continued impact there. And I think you're going to see more impact into certain parts of healthcare. It's a little harder in that industry. But things like electrical, other categories yeah. where there's, you know, where you got to look at what Amazon does well, right? It's they're a wonderful transactional and fulfillment platform, right? And they what they do well is they take a lot of data and they make it easy for a customer to find it, right? Quickly, 600 million products on Amazon, right? Think about if you guys are Prime members, think about how quickly you can find product on that site. Now, you could argue that the search results aren't great in some cases, sure, but you know, ultimately they deliver on that, right? And that's been proven by the customer, they're voting for it. And so in categories where there's enormous selection and it's about price and selection, and getting the product quickly, Amazon has a good chance of winning a lot of business.
And that's where it seems like investing in Amazon business, and I'm still, to the degree to which those things really are separate, Amazon.
Yeah, I'll describe that in a second. Yeah.
But I think that's where the investment in really deep and full content experiences on Amazon is so important. Because if you win the search bar, then your content is the thing that's making you, and there's a bunch of stuff in the algorithm,
right?
But you want, you don't want them to not be able to get their answers on your Amazon page. Is that right?
Well, exactly. I mean, you've got, and again, given the prominence of the platform, as a owner of a product or brand, you know, you need to really control that content. And Amazon, you know, has given you tools to do it, right? It's not that they're not there. You're just not using them, a lot of the folks listening. So use them. To answer your question about what's different between Amazon and Amazon Business, it's the same site. It's the same platform. Amazon Business, it's different than, you guys might remember Amazon Supply, which was their precursor to what they're doing today. Amazon Supply was a separate site. It didn't really work. But Amazon is great at, you know, kind of learning things from things that don't work. They're not afraid to fail. Easy to say that when you have the war chest they have, but they're not afraid to fail, okay? So they have the war chest, reality of business, they fail, they learn. Amazon Business launched in 2015. It's the same website, okay? So what they do is they allow a business buyer to set up an account, which puts a filter on Amazon, where there are differences in the experience for the B2B buyer. And they are, they can name preferred suppliers they want to buy from through Amazon for procurement, you know, if they have a particular supplier. They can access business level pricing. So if I'm a seller on Amazon and I want to set up my pens to sell them at a discount in bulk to a business buyer, I can do that. If I have, as a business procurement professional at a large company, if I have certain criteria I need to meet for buying from women-owned or minority-owned businesses, I can filter for those things on Amazon Business.
That's huge.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. I have Amazon Business is extending credit terms to me, so I can buy on credit with Amazon. Right, I can manage my spend on Amazon. Amazon, you know, spend management tools. Look, Amazon, all these things we profess to businesses about being a good B2B partner to your customer. Amazon puts the customer first. They go out and they learn. They're learning what the buyer needs to be successful in their role, make their jobs easier, and they're implementing them on the site.
And by doing so, they're essentially commoditizing that experience. So it's no longer, when you think of, all right, how do you differentiate yourself as a distributor from Amazon?
Yeah.
The stakes now have risen.
Other
things have to come into play. To your point, the categories where Amazon can't provide that, can't support the complexity of a sale or the information requirements that just can't be offered up through their experience.
Well, I mean, the first chapter of my book, which will be out soon, Justin.
what's the title of your book? Yeah.
The book is, and it's an inside joke for those of you listening. Justin beat me to the market with his book. So the title of the book is $1 Billion B2B E-Commerce. And if you put a .com at the end of that, you get to the website and you can register $1 Billion B2B E-commerce.
Is the dollar a dollar sign?
It's no, it's not that cheesy, man.
I'm just checking.
There's a dollar sign in the middle of the
logo.
So I guess I am cheesy. And the first chapter of my book is The Time Is Now. And why is the time now? It's because the story has all been told, right? I mean, if you think about retail, right? Look at the businesses you used to buy from all the time. You know, your Circuit Cities back in the day. You know, the Sears, which is on the just about out of business. What happened with those businesses? Well, a lot of the way they differentiated for 100 years was on price and selection and convenience to the customer. Well, the world has changed, and they all have an excuse to some degree because no one saw e-commerce coming the way it's come on. But you know, in the distribution world, guess what, guys? The story's been told. If you're a distributor It's a very analogous business model to the department stores and the retail chains. Mm-hmm. And as a distributor, you got to step it up, man. You've got to be looking at how do you differentiate in the market beyond price and selection? So the bar is continuously being raised by Amazon. And that, by the way, that's not the only threat. I mean, this is not just about Amazon, guys. This is about, you know, distributors who are getting it and manufacturers going direct, but also distributors who are getting it and they're investing heavily. If you're not investing, you've got to really think about, what you can do to differentiate. I have a great example. I interviewed a guy from a company called Bay Fastening Systems, which is a small distributor. And they have, this is incredible. They have doubled the business in 5 years by using e-commerce. Mm-hmm. Doubled the business. And I'm not just talking about e-commerce. I'm talking about their entire channel. Their e-commerce is somewhere between 35 and 40% of their total sales. This is not a huge company. And they're selling fasteners. This is a commodity business. But what are they doing? They went to their customers. They listened to them. They implemented e-commerce in a smart way, and they're getting more share of wallet from their customers, and they're in Google now. They're ranked really highly in Google, and they're getting new customers. He says 15 to 20 new customers a week from e-commerce. And that's a business that moved. They're not Grainger. They're not MSC. They're not a huge company, but they're making moves. So this isn't reserved just for the high, the top of the.
So heap. Digging into that just a little bit more. How are they in fasteners? I can just imagine that's about as commodity as you can get.
Yep.
Is it that they have, because it's still kind of open season out there, you can go in and you can start winning just by investing in search?
Yes. The time is now. I mean, you move now, you can actually still establish advantage. I was in e-commerce in 1999 and 2000, 2001. When this same dynamic was at play in the retail sector. Mm-hmm. We're talking, that's 20 years ago, right? Mm-hmm. So that's why I say the story's been told, right? This thing is happening in B2B, and your time is now, and you can be a Bay Fastening and be a small distributor and double your business if you move, but you have to move. And it came from the CEO. That's where it has to come from. Family-owned business. It has to come from the CEO.
Because we've seen in B2C that there was definitely the value of early mover advantage.
Yes. We live this in B2C retail, guys. I mean, the foundation becomes harder and harder to establish as you grow the business. I mean, give you a quick story. And in 2004, I was a CEO of a furniture company, an online pure-play e-commerce furniture company. We launched a site called TotalBedroom.com. Doesn't exist anymore. We're talking ancient history, guys.
TotalBedroom.com.
TotalBedroom.com.
And you're telling me you're not cheesy. Please, go ahead.
But hey, man, this thing was... So within like a month, we were ranked number one on Google for all these terms related to bedroom furniture, right? We were breaking in the dollars. It was great. This business grew from zero to $10 million in no time because we knew how to play the Google game, right? We knew how to optimize sites and grow them just by and it was the reason, why does that exist? You can't do that anymore, right? With using a Google, or even increasingly, it's hard to do that on Amazon because you have so much competition now. But the point is, those days that existed 15, 16 years ago, that doesn't exist anymore. That kind of dynamic still, to some degree, exists in B2B. If you serve your customer well, Bay Fastening shows up right at the top of the Google search results for non-branded search terms, meaning not people aren't looking for quote-unquote Bay Fastening systems. They're looking for specific types of fasteners. Well, guess where they show up? Right at the top of the search results. He's the total bedroom of today in B2B, right? So he's earning all kinds of money on this. But it's the timing.
Is there an opportunity on the Amazon business side? Do you see kind of the open frontier?
It's definitely early for Amazon business in many categories. Office, not so much, but in other categories, for sure. Amazon's out hiring people out of industry so that they can recruit the buy or the sell side to the equation. They're doing the same thing on the buy side too, and so if you're early in selection in Amazon business, you do have some advantages. Today, that won't last forever, though, because they're building the assortment, just like they've done on the consumer side. So the
tactics now are pretty well understood.
Yeah.
You just need to learn them, and then you need to have the right people to execute them.
Right, and that's why we have a business, quite frankly, is because it's very easy to screw up Amazon when you get started. So our business helps to make sure that you know, you're building an asset, a foundation on Amazon, and you're, you know, you're doing the content right, you're not screwing up the service levels and other things, it's really easy to get your account suspended. I don't care who you are. You can be a $2 billion company. You can screw up some things in Amazon, and it's very hard for you to restart.
Inventory is so important.
Yeah, inventory is critical.
If you run out of inventory, you can be off in the search results for 3 months before you climb back up.
Shipping times, customer service, just meeting their criteria.
It's interesting. It's sort of Amazon kind of forcing companies to be customer first by their
policies. I think they're the great leveler. I really do. Yeah. I think it's raised the bar, certainly on the retail side, on the consumer side. And it's happening in B2B too.
And you'd mentioned earlier about Bay Fasteners that it was the CEO that got it.
Yeah.
If you were at a manufacturer today and you were looking at your CEO and going, they aren't getting it, would you stay and try to convince, or would you go, this is not happening?
That's a great question.
How do you evaluate it?
I think you have to take that on a situation by situation basis. However, look, if facts are, I believe in, Jim Collins wrote this great book, Good to Great, right? And I would say, confront the reality of your situation. Mm-hmm. And what do great leaders do? What do great businesses do? They confront the reality of their situation, the brutal reality of their situation is how he puts it. And I think, you know, look, if somebody doesn't get it after talk and after presenting clear facts, you gotta go somewhere else, because, you know, that, you know, not to say the company's going to die, but it's, you know, it's going to be an uphill road for them, and it's going to get harder and harder for them to continue to differentiate in the future without a digital strategy. So.
And the demand for digital skills is so strong out in the marketplace. Yeah. There are places where you can be the first mover, and that's going to be a cool experience, I would think.
I mean, the companies, I have to tell you guys, I mean, you guys, you live this. I mean, you know it, you see it. You know, the companies that truly take advantage of this are winning.
Huge opportunities. Yeah. So your book, Billion Dollar B2B Business?
B2B e-commerce.
Billion Dollar B2B e-commerce. Yeah, yeah. Talk to us a little bit about your book. What made you write it? I mean, eventually write it. Finish it.
Eventually write it.
Finish it.
Oh, come on, Justin. I didn't have legions of armies of people helping me, man.
If you had so many people at your workshop, we got to have some balancing.
Okay, fair enough. Touche. What made me write it? Well, about 3 years ago, I was doing consulting, helping B2B companies try to map their path. And I was getting asked questions about, hey, what can I read? You know, what is out there? And I went and looked, and I didn't see anything, really. I mean, this was before your book was in the market, Justin, and there was, there just wasn't anything really out there for people to reference. And so at the time, I had 40, 50 articles, you know, written on LinkedIn, and I had done all this content. You know, I'd been doing it for a couple of years, and I said, gosh, how hard could it be to put this together into a book? That was 3 years ago. So
I've heard it's one of the hardest things to do.
I know why people don't write books every day, particularly if you've got a day job and you're trying to build a company and other things. But it's a lot of work. But I have to say, a lot of it is that I had a lot to say, right? So I've got 12 chapters in there. It's almost 400 pages. Wow. Yeah, it's like the Bible for B2B in some ways. I mean, it's like this thing is, and it's got everything in it. I mean, leadership, organizational change. It's got channel conflict management. I have a whole chapter on Amazon Business. I talk about digital marketing for B2B, user experience, selecting a platform. So really, it really covers a lot of the foundational items that an executive needs to understand if they're going to invest in this.
And if this is building our audience's appetite for cracking open that 400-page book, they can go to your site. You have an email address sign up so people can know when it's coming.
That's
certainly
right.
You're on LinkedIn. All your channels, are you on the Twitter?
I'm on the Twitter. I'm not on Instagram. I'm not cool enough or young enough anymore.
I want to see the pictures of the billion-dollar business on Instagram.
Exactly.
Well, Brian Beck, thank you so much for talking with us and joining us and talking about what is really the amazing opportunity for B2B brands that start doing this now.
Exactly. Yeah, thank you guys so much for having
me. Absolutely.
Really enjoyed it.
Coming.
Awesome.
That's it for today's podcast. Where are you at in executing your digital strategy? Is Amazon Business a crisis or an opportunity for you? Let us know. Come to the Digital Shelf Institute's LinkedIn page or tweet at us @WinDigitalShelf. Thanks for being part of our community.